Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can harness the power of AI to drive remarkable growth. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by senior executive changemakers from around the globe, unpacking what works and what doesn't. Ready to unlock growth mode together? Let's get started. All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of Banking Reinvented, the podcast for changemakers in banking. And today I'm being joined by Michael Kurowski, who is the Director of Strategy End at PwC. Michael, thanks for being in the show.
Hi, Tim, and it's great to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Most welcome. Maybe for starters, a bit of background on yourself, Michael, and the role that you're in with Strategy End.
Sure. So maybe before I go into the current role, a bit of history. So my career, all the time in financial services, mostly in strategic consulting, working on top-line, bottom-line improvements. But then I also had the need to go into more details in terms of technology. So I was also leading a technology transformation in the regional banking group. And now, going into my role, it is to combine the both worlds. So how to use the technology transformation and the new tools that we have to drive profitability, to impact the banking and the wider financial sector.
Yeah, so basically the previous role you're in was with Raiffeisen, right? Looking at their global transformation programs prior.
Correct.
Yeah, really great to have you on the show. We're going to dive deep on a topic that is pretty specific, but I think also pretty broad to your own point when we were connecting just now, which is embedded finance. But before we get started, I would typically kick off the show asking, what is currently top of mind to you, Michael, in the conversations that you're having with the customers that you're servicing? What is most top of mind?
Yeah. So generally the whole topic of embedded finance is, I wouldn't say it's top of mind for the banking executives, but there, you know, this sparks that appears from time to time that can maybe influence it a bit more. And there, I think two reasons that caught my attention. One is Google releasing the agent payment protocol, AP2, if you'd like. And this is basically to allow AI agents to do your, you know, reorder your groceries online, book your flight tickets, and so on and so forth. And why this is important? Because this protocol is basically agreed with over 60 market leaders like MasterCard, PayPal, Salesforce, and so on. So it will release some of the, I don't know, friction, make certain things easier because it's agreed upon. And second one is on the FIDA, so the new European regulations that's to be introduced, basically allowing the financial institutions, very wide definition, to share the data, and recent discussion within European Union to exclude from that enabling regulation the big techs, which is an interesting kind of discussion to go into. Like, you can definitely sense a bit of threat from financial institutions and allowing fintechs, a big techs, to have the same sort of access to financial data.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. And indeed, it very much gives us a starting point for the conversation. Because what is exactly embedded finance? And why is there so much traction on it today? What's the angle?
So the concept itself is not new, but it's gaining a lot. It's accelerating heavily due to technology enablement. But basically, it's the integration of financial services like payments, lending, insurance into non-financial world, into non-financial platform. So it's basically how to embed your financial needs into everyday digital experiences. So how to make the customer the center of it all. Yeah. So why would you go to a banking branch to get a loan if you can have it at the point of sale in your e-commerce platform? Yeah. So think of it as much, much better contextualizing the offer, the service, financial service that can be provided to the client, but at the moment they actually need it. Yeah. So switching a two-step approach, I would like to purchase something and I would like to get a financing for it, for example, into basically one-step process. It's a one-need fulfillment process. And it's a very broad definition idea. And this is where interesting part also comes in as to what is the value of embedded finance, like what's the valuation of that market in the future as well. And there's an actually interesting debate on this, triggered by Forbes article actually, because of the differences in definition, the expectations on the values are very, very different. So some like more wide definition estimated to be currently the value of embedded finance to be around $3 billion, and $3 trillion, and it's to reach $7 trillion in the next 5 years. And this is aligned to our research at PwC that roughly 2/3 of global economic activity will occur within some sort of business ecosystems. But of course, there are more, let's say, narrow definitions used, thinking about the new use cases, the new applications of embedded finance, so linking the two words. And they estimate it to be 100 billion currently, give or take, and reach over $1 trillion. Yeah. But whichever way you look at it, yeah, the jury is still out which definition is better, but whichever way to look at it, it is big, it will become huge. The growth is fewfold. So as a banker, you cannot miss it. You shouldn't miss it. Yeah,
maybe coming back to your early point that there's these moments in time where embedded finance all of a sudden becomes a thing again. To me, it very much feels like right now in the past few weeks when OpenAI with Stripe deliver agentic commerce, and it claims a new category of thinking, a new category of interaction. What's your view on this? Is that exactly at the heart of embedded finance, this one use case, or how do you see this evolve?
This is a very good example of one of the use cases. The whole topic of AI agents and AI platforms, like AI chat platforms, this is just becoming a new sort of platform on which the financial services can be distributed and to which the financial institutions should integrate to. But there are more examples of other use cases, for sure.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you're the right person to ask, but just out of curiosity, we tend to talk about the form factor, like what type of device, what type of experience are we eventually as consumers, as humans, going to utilize to interact with the AI or the new fabric that we're moving into over the coming probably years. If you think about agentic commerce in ChatGPT, it's still like folding the old world into the new and trying to figure out how can you most easily drive this particular use case. What's your thinking on this? Do you feel that this is the end station, or are we still far away from the future form factor?
No, I definitely don't think that this is the end station. I mean, this is because, as you said, we are changing the way the sort of, from the consumer perspective, we are changing the software part, but we are still communicating using the sort of old devices. Yeah. And probably going forward, there will be some more integration into ourselves, actually, not even our lives, but into ourselves of the new forms of devices. Like glasses are one thing, but probably it can be more. Like think of wearables, like they were not with us some years ago, and now more and more is happening. Also, this is also impacting the financial services with all the watch payments and so on and so forth. So this is not the end station, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, clearly there's much more to come, which is also exciting. It's also a bit like, what does that look like, right? It's like the new iPhone moment almost. It will come. Hey, then moving on. If you think about the financial ecosystems, Michael, how are they evolving when it comes to embedded finance? Do you see the traction? And maybe also how are partnerships playing into that type of transformation? Because the moment it's embedded finance, it's not just you in the driver's seat as a financial institution. It's, you know, connecting the dots with a Stripe as an example here, or connecting the dots with other parties, vendors, ecosystems, platforms. What do you think?
So generally, we are moving away from the traditional banking model in which usually there was one entity who was managing the whole process, starting from, you know, financial, regulatory, technical layers, but also going through the direct interaction with the customer. So within the new sort of ecosystems, they are becoming much more customer centric. We don't, or less sort of us centric as financial institutions. Therefore, we want to be where the customers are, and maybe less so, or in parallel, still pulling the customers to us. Yeah. But as such, there are certain, I don't know, ecosystems, partnerships appearing, and you can think of them in multiple angles. Like one angle is types of companies. And there are banks partnering with big techs, Goldman Sachs and Apple, retailers with the banking as a service providers, like, I don't know, Walmart and One, or in Poland, Allegro and Vodeno, or certain, I don't know, producers of cars, for example, like Tesla and the insurance companies. But this is one angle by type of entity. But the more interesting angle is within the value chain of the embedded finance. And here at PwC Strategy, and we define, let's say, four roles that certain entity can play in the embedded finance. And starting from the top, so where the customers are, first role is platform. Yeah. So these are the players who are aggregating the services across providers. They usually tend to have the interaction with the customer. Going lower, you have the realizers, meaning those are the companies who actually provide the financial product underneath. These can be banks, these can be insurance companies, this can be factoring companies. Yeah, so these are the product enablers, the risk takers, and so on. Going further, you have enablers, which is a very wide set of companies who are part of that new ecosystem that you are creating. So think of it as debt collector, software agencies, etc. Yeah. Some of it can be provided by the same players as we mentioned before, but there is a space for a new types of entities to appear. And at the end, you have the license holder, meaning the company which is regulated if it's needed to be, and who's taking care of all the regulatory, financial scrutiny, and so on. And why partnering in general is essential is because it allows you to scale faster. You don't need to build it yourself. You can just reuse plug and play concepts, partner with someone who excels at a different place in the ecosystem. It also helps the more legacy financial institutions to actually stay relevant, yeah? Because we don't need to, I don't know, prove the point heavily that big techs are, you know, way further in terms of innovations, investments into new technologies, etc. So, of course, from financial institutions' perspective, they are heavily still investing, innovating, etc. But probably in a bit different areas. So you don't want to replicate, you maybe want to reuse to some extent what others are doing. And of course, you want a partner to access new customer segments that you wouldn't access in a sort of traditional banking model.
Yeah, is it fair to say, by the way, very helpful, these four different, let's say, buckets or layers of how this comes to life, which is clearly a partnership strategy. To me, it very much sounds like, where's the distribution sitting and how do you get access to the distribution and what needs to then hold true to basically tap into that type of ecosystem? In a way, it's almost the bank knocking on the door of those that have distribution, that have the audience, to get visibility. Is that a way to look at it?
For multiple years now, there was a discussion that banks need to reinvent themselves in order not to lose that customer interaction, because they are big techs entering, they are fintechs innovating, etc. So the worry was that the banks will lose the customer interaction. And to some extent, embedded finance is the answer to this. Like, but it's, I would be very cautious to say that the banks will lose it completely, because I don't think it's true. It's rather extending the reach that they already have, the interactions that they already built with the customers through different channels, sources, etc. So rather to interact more with them using other distribution channels, basically. And banking, for example, if you look at it from the applications perspective, what other, outside of, I don't know, social media, news platforms, etc., what other application on your phone you open more frequently than the banking platform? Like, so banks are still, like, they invested heavily in the having the direct access to the customer. It is paying off, but why stop there? Just, you know, go beyond. Look for new ways of increase that interactions. And
what we would typically say in Backbase is banks are uniquely positioned because they have high intimacy, because it's your money, you know, that's an intimate element of life, and trust, but also high frequency, because you often check certain activity in your banking application for whatever reason, basically doing your daily dealings, meaning that is holding true to your statement is holding true today. At the same time, it's getting challenged, right? It's getting challenged piece by piece, step by step. Agentic commerce is just one little sliver, but it will go broader. It will go deeper for sure. You see the same thing with the neobanks that are now going into markets and are scaling incredibly fast. Apparently, they're bringing something to the table that sets them apart, that differentiates them, and the market responds. The customer, the consumer, the user responds. And they're basically voting with their feet, right? They go there in flocks. It's a few million per month, I believe, by now that they're onboarding. So I think in the market, the dynamic is really rapidly shifting, meaning you need to get ready and you need to focus on the use cases that will or might move the needle. And again, that depends on where you're operating. But maybe as a next question, Michael, what are the most promising use cases today when it comes to embedded finance that will move the needle? What are you seeing?
So there are lots of different types of use cases, and starting from the most, I don't know, close to everyday consumer. Within retail and e-commerce, you have the buy now, pay later, where financing is embedded basically in your checkout process within the e-commerce platform. But there are more, like embedded wallets, loyalty-linked financing, and so on and so forth. But where it gets even more interesting is if we step away from the typical sort of retail and e-commerce link is, for example, mobility. Those are in-app insurances, toll payments, or for example, cases like with Uber, who's offering their drivers debit cards with instant payouts. It's also a form of embedded finance. Healthcare, patient financing, embedded insurance for certain procedures. In SMEs, there are a lot of small, medium enterprises. There's a lot of things happening with invoice factoring embedded into your ERP platforms, trade finance topics. What else? Real estate, mortgages being pre-approved in your proper property platforms. Yeah. So those are just the examples. And BNPL, which is probably the most known, most talked about, is just the tip of the iceberg. And we are seeing embedded finance reshaping how people do other daily activities. Yeah. And you asked that question a bit earlier as well. Why now? And generally, this is not a new concept, because for multiple years now in the electronics physical shop, there was a bank representative, for example, offer POS lending. But now it's going, you know, much more into digital, much more in the sort of small micro moments that the clients are having. It's driven by the rise of technology. So APIs, more and more banking as a service platforms. It is also driven by the big techs, because they are also looking for the new ways to grow, to interact, to like keep the activity, keep the moments that the clients are having with them when they are in the logged in. Yeah. So a lot of it happening. The general idea is not new, but there are a lot of innovations now to change it going forward.
Yeah, basically you see the concepts already holding true for maybe a decade already, if not a little bit longer even. But right now it's rapidly picking up, or at least you're seeing it more deeply ingrained because they are real business models. They are proven. You see the Klarnas, you see the other examples in BNPL that, you know, they really are a solid business. And they just bring it closer to the moment of truth with the customer. That's what's happening. So distribution gets there where the moment actually becomes meaningful. One final angle, I'm curious for your take. Crypto, stable coins. There's a lot of talk again about, especially stable coins at this moment in time. When I'm hearing you saying about embedded finance, when I'm hearing you saying wallets, there is a crypto blockchain type of angle to it. What's the state of affairs when you look at it?
Like, think of it as another financial product underneath that. So remembering the four roles I mentioned within the embedded finance. So this would probably fill into the role of realizer. Yeah, there is a certain customer need and it didn't change when blockchain was invented. Yeah, it's just another way to realize that need. So for me, it falls mostly in the category, it's another financial product underneath. Of course, it's addressing a bit of a different use cases, yeah, because it's not like there's a one universal product for all. It's another product to fit and to fill particular customer need. It is definitely helping with the general, I don't know, adoption of digital tools, yeah, making it faster, maybe getting some of the friction out of the way because of the how fast it is, how cheap it is to transfer money now, etc. So it unlocks new areas, but in the end, it's just another product that realizes customer needs.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think mostly it will just improve the speed, it will improve the transparency, it will improve the pace of adoption. There's going to be a moment where the switch just flips, also when it comes to this particular technology. Hey, then moving on to the final question, if not the most important question, what should banks, financial institutions, what should they be doing to get ready for embedded finance at large? What are the ingredients you would argue need to hold true for them to be able to capture the opportunity?
We have recently released also a few papers and reports on that at PwC. And generally, what we defined are four transformational priorities that the financial institutions need to undertake. And those are redefine your value. Second is adjust your technology infrastructure. Third is foster entrepreneurship within your company. And last, manage risk. And now maybe going into more details on those four. So first, you need to define what role do you want to play in the ecosystem. And so think of it again, who you want to partner with, on which layer of that ecosystem you wanna sit in. And generally, while doing this, rethink your business model, whether what you think are your strengths, is it really true? Maybe your strength lies elsewhere. Maybe your key strength is you have a very attractive product and processes for risk scoring, and this is how you were winning the market for a while. Then think of it, how to use that to increase your role in the ecosystem. So basically switch from looking at things from your product perspective, think about experiences the clients are having and how you can fulfill them using your strengths. Yeah. Second, on the tech stack, because majority of the banks, yeah, and excluding fintechs, are not so, you know, recently created entities. So they sit on a lot of legacy technology, legacy infrastructure, legacy tools. So you need to modernize. Like, so creating a ecosystem in a digital world requires you to have effective way to integrate via APIs, have a flexibility on your infrastructure, to have, how to say, order in your data governance so that you can get more value out of the interactions and the data it creates for personalization, for risk assessment, and so on and so forth. Yeah. Third, on the entrepreneurship. So think of it as you need to create or accelerate the culture of entrepreneurship within your big enterprise. Yeah? Simplify how you cooperate with external partners, how you onboard them. Maybe think of some vehicles you can set up to financially also add that extra spark of entrepreneurship. Yeah? And last but not least, do not forget that there are plenty of new risks appearing in the overall ecosystem embedded finance play, both in terms of interoperability, in terms of data containment, complexities that the partnership brings, distribution risks. So manage the risks effectively, because you're opening yourself to the world, which is good, which is the whole goal, but then do it in a way that you manage the risks that appear along the way.
Got it. So basically define the role you want to play in the ecosystem. So do you want to be the platform? Do you want to be the orchestrator, the enabler, or the participant? Modernize your tech stack. That's easily said. Modernize your tech stack. That's a lot of work, right? To your point. Become cloud native, have an API first platform, bring it all together, drive a modernization effort. You touched lightly on investing in data infrastructure. I think that one is incredibly important, right? Making sure that you have your data properly set up, so that, you know, you can get all the value out of it as you go along, to personalize, to be compliant, to manage your risk. And lastly, what is the business model that you're bringing to the table, right? So how are you going to bring embedded finance into your business model so it really becomes a P&L line item? As much as the possibility is there, you also need to look at it from that vantage point. Then the other one that you mentioned I thought was interesting is the entrepreneurial part. You skipped over it a bit, but what does that mean? How do you bring it to practice, if I may be so free?
If you think of it, basically the whole idea that we don't need to be limited to the old banking or insurance companies channels, distribution channels, branch, agents, call center, your own digital channels, but you're basically opening yourself to a lot of new ideas. Hey, why don't we sell insurance in Teslas that are being produced? Or maybe let's integrate to ERP platforms to offer financing for trade deals that are happening. So on one hand side, it creates the whole new set of opportunities, which are much less contained within the typical areas. But you need to have a culture, first of all, of people who will identify those opportunities, who will be able to drive it to scale, yeah? Because the goal of it is not to identify it, but actually to get something out of it. And for that, you need to simplify how, you know, partnership works, how you onboard the customers, etc. Because it doesn't matter how, you know, great entrepreneurial spirit you'll have, if it will take a few years to set up new partnership, to start testing something. First of all, the idea might be outdated already. Second of all, the people who wanted to do it, there might be already, you know, tired of it. They will leave your company to do that cases elsewhere. So get rid of all the roadblocks along the way. And last, you know, financial institutions do set up their own also investment vehicles. So when you identify an interesting technology, you can also partner with it financially. So again, looking for this extra ways to grow, to improve your position. And for that, the entrepreneurial culture spirit is super important.
Fully agreed. Let's end on that note. I think embedded finance overall is definitely an area where entrepreneurial views to really make progress are necessary. New avenue, new distribution, new ecosystem you can tap into. I think it was very clear from your end, Michael, when it comes to how do you approach all of this. Make sure you've got your platform properly in place. Make sure you've modernized the basics so you foundationally can execute on this. Make sure you have a good view on the partner strategy you're going to deploy so that you have the right players in the right layers of the model that you shared. And lastly, find the right business model angle with the right entrepreneurial DNA to make progress and make inroads. I think those are a bit of the ingredients that I'm hearing from the conversation. Michael, any final thing you'd like to highlight or anything that I've missed in my brief summary here?
No, I think you summarized it well, given how, let's say, extent and wide the topic is. I'm curious on to the point I mentioned earlier, what's the value of the embedded finance market? And yeah, would be interesting to jump this 5 years ahead and check it. So I'm sort of waiting for that 2030 moment, which is still when everyone is now forecasting. So cannot wait for that to happen to see which of the predictions and forecasts actually happened.
Yeah, I'm with you. If only we had a crystal ball, Michael. But we're gonna keep a check on it. Let's maybe reconnect in 6 months, 12 months, just do another pulse check. Hey, the embedded finance movement, where are we? What are the numbers telling us? But having said that, thanks for sharing your knowledge and insights with us and with the audience, Michael. If you want to follow Michael on LinkedIn, search for Michael Karoski. You can also find him in the show notes. And once more, thanks for spending time with us and have a great week. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow us on LinkedIn, where we'll be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.